Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's June 17th, 37 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. So it looks like we all had some snow showers, rain showers, and mix of everything for Park City. And I'm actually picking up on our radar infrared blend right now. Looks like, State Route 224, you guys are getting some showers, rain showers, a little bit changing over across Daly Avenue to some snow showers. Just, I'd say, north and west of Kearns Boulevard, also getting some snow showers. And I just say Deer Valley Drive actually just seeing a clearing right now, but still plenty of clouds. So this leads me to kind of my next story, which would be, while this is going to be clearing, you're not done yet. Still get ready for some more snow showers. Very light, of course, but that's just more nuisance weather, and just be careful driving. Also some rain showers. I'd like to add that I'm concerned about fog tonight into tomorrow morning. So that's a heads up there. I just do think you're going to get areas of patchy fog, and I actually think areas of dense fog as well. So one of the things I always tell people, please do not turn on your high beams. Those are suspended water particles, reflects a lot of light, does not work for driving. All right, let's get up to our daily high temperatures. For today, we're going to see temperatures only in the low to mid-50s, like we were talking about earlier this week. We're going to see 54 as your expected high temperature, hovering at the freezing mark, slightly above it. I'm going to go with a 33 tonight. And then tomorrow, we're going to hit mid-60s, a little bit cooler than I initially anticipated by about 2 degrees. So I'm going to go with a 64 for today. But keep in mind, early tomorrow morning, you will encounter that fog, right? That's going to be a problem. And then on Friday, we're going to get sunnier, mostly sunny skies into this upcoming weekend. I do think we'll see a few extra clouds. So initially I had a sunny skies for Saturday. I'm going with mostly sunny. You may see a few more clouds earlier and then mixing out, a high of 74. And then on Sunday, Father's Day, it's going to be really nice. I thought we would go with an 80, but I'm going to go with a 79. I'm just splitting hairs right now simply because I see a little cold air filtering in. And I don't want to commit to that 80 just yet, but overnight lows are going to be nice in the mid-50s, so pretty mild evening. And then Monday, we're going to hit 80s for sure, an 82. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to go with an 82 as well. But the biggest story for tonight after this clears out would be that fog everybody's going to have to deal with late tonight, early tomorrow morning. And I say this simply because one of our producers lives in Park City, works here, and she had a tough time driving this morning. So that's going to be the issue for tomorrow morning. Be safe.
Okay. Thanks, Erica.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Halber. He'll have details from yesterday's board meeting. The board scheduled to approve next year's budget. Also, they had another look at master planning. Park City Manager Matt Dias will be on the phone with a preview of the agenda for Thursday's City Council meeting, including the adoption of next year's budget. And then finally, Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang has an update on their virtual film offerings, including a film and Q&A happening today. A reminder that the Wasatch County Council meeting today at 3 o'clock, they'll be getting a health department update. Also, a discussion and possible decision on a land exchange agreement between Wasatch County and Heber Light and Power. A couple of public hearings are also scheduled, one regarding a proposed amendment to the Jordanelle Basin Overlay Zone to remove unnecessary sections and modify the permitted and conditional tables in the zone, and another ordinance proposal that are related to the use of wells that would serve properties less than 5 acres in size, which is currently the standard. Also, the Summit County Council meeting at 3:30. You can check both of their websites, again, for the Zoom meeting links. 8:10 now, good morning. Well, developers for the proposed Dakota Pacific mixed-use neighborhood at Kimball Junction hosted their second online open house yesterday. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that during the session, they responded to questions about their workforce housing, impacts on traffic, as well as other items.
The Dakota plan is going to a public hearing next week before the Snyderville Planning Commission. The Director of Development for Dakota, Jeff Gottner, said the project is located on 60 acres. The land was approved for the Boyer Tet Park in 2008. Dakota bought it in 2018. Their proposed density of 1.3 million square feet is the same as the Tet Park approval. Gottner said the project will include 1,100 residential units. Of those, 1,020 will be rentals, and those include 300 sets affordable or attainable units.
For those people that earn anywhere between 30% of the area median income up to 120% area median income. Our obligation by code is to provide 256 workforce housing units. So those fall within the 30% and 80% AMI. And then we have 50 units that we threw in effectively as a bonus that are 100% AMI, half of them 25, 100% AMI, and 25, 120% AMI, which you might say, well, you know, that's effectively market, but it does have a deed restriction on them. So if market was to go way above where it is, there's a limitation to how much rents can increase in these units over time.
He was asked if the workforce units they supply won't just be taken up by Dakota's own employee force. Gottner said no, tallying that their hotel would require 8 employee units, the retail about the same, and office users would need some 62 units. He said in filling the workforce units, they would give a priority to those who live or work in Summit County. He added that the build-out of the residential units will take at best about 5 years. It will likely be 5 to 10 years. Asked about traffic impacts, Gottner said their analysis shows they will generate less congestion than Boyer's previous office park use, especially looking at peak hours.
Traffic was all generated at peak, so in the morning rush hour and the evening rush hour, that's when the transportation was occurring. With our project being a mix of uses where people will be living there, and if they work in Park City or the Canyons, it's likely that they would, rather than hop in their car, they would take a bus there. Also, if it's a family with someone who's at home taking care of the children, their trips will be spread out throughout the day, not at peak hour necessarily. So if they've got to go to a dance class or a music recital, those will be spread throughout the day rather than at peak. So generation of our project versus the existing project is a 40% reduction in peak hour traffic.
Dakota's traffic consultant, Jim Charlier, said there will be growth in Summit County, but this is the kind of project that can minimize traffic.
Because it's adjacent to a transit center that we think will become a major regional transit node down the road, and that we're going to work to help make that happen. It's a mixed-use project so that we're able to get some benefit from people being able to walk some places that previously they had to drive. It will enable people who now live down in the valley and have jobs up in Summit County to come up here and live, and that will reduce driving on regional roadways and on roads in Summit County. There is no place in Summit County where you could put or spread 1,100 dwelling units that would generate less traffic than this location.
On another topic, Gottner said the open space within their project is 41 acres compared to 26 acres in the old Boyer plan. He said that means there will be fewer cars parking on the surface. There's also 1,100 acres of land to the south of their land. He was asked if that is protected open space.
Yes, the land to the south and to the west is preserved open space. And I would assume it's permanently preserved because it's owned by the county. So it remains open space, and we're not encroaching on that in any way.
Jeff Gottner for Dakota Pacific. A couple of callers asked about senior housing, and he said they would be glad to discuss that. He said they hope the approval process will be completed this year, and perhaps they could start construction in the summer and fall of 2021. For KPCW, I'm Rick Brough.
KPCW News Time now, 8:17. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Board of Education met yesterday to adopt next year's school budget, as well as to get another update on its master planning efforts. On the phone with details, I have School District Business Administrator Todd Halber. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So did the board go ahead and approve the budget?
They did. So the preliminary budget that we had published, along with a list of reductions, was adopted last night.
Okay, so how much of a cut did they go for?
So at this point, we're running with what we would call the worst case scenario, which is if the legislature reduces state support by $3 million, that's been now built in to the budget. And then we'll see what happens with the special session tomorrow. If the reduction is something less than that, then the board will reconvene and we'll build back in any cuts that were not necessary.
All right. So those $3 million in cuts, where did you cut from?
So about a third of it came by reducing the number of requests that we had built into that original budget. So we'll be delaying some of the major projects that we had hoped to get started in the school year coming up. We also reduced on a one-time basis some of our carry forward. So with schools being changed in delivering education because of COVID, we had some operational savings. So we're going to hold on to those and patch reductions in the budget with that for 1 year. And then we also had some ongoing budget reductions because expenses are coming in less than anticipated, as well as we had some positions that were double funded due to grants. So we're just kind of sweeping the corners and making things work for this budget cycle.
Yeah, the preliminary budget actually called for a 3% increase in salaries, as well as the step and lane changes. So how were those cut?
So those were set aside dollars because negotiations were ongoing at the time the preliminary budget was put together. So the funding that was identified for that became available for the reduction instead of for a compensation conversation. We'll see what happens with the legislature tomorrow, and that may change the whole complexion, and we're able to get those negotiations started again.
Right. So school districts across the state were asked to prepare scenarios that could, again, reduce funding by up to 10%. They also said you could go to a 2 and a 5%. Why did you decide to go for all 10%?
Yeah, great question. From a budgetary standpoint, it's much easier to take the full reduction and then add back than to get into the fiscal year and try to cut further as you find out what additional reductions the state legislature might give us.
All right. So tomorrow, the first item on the special session agenda is to talk about funding and budget. Does that mean that we'll hear that first then? I mean, if people wanted to tune in?
I would love that to be the case, that they would just work through the list in that order provided by the governor. No, the legislature will work its way through the issues as they see fit. I'm sure there's a design to it all. For those of us, including other state agencies, we're very interested in knowing what the reduction levels might be. Because the fiscal year starts in just a couple of weeks. We're all in the same boat of not knowing exactly how to move forward, knowing that there's these looming reductions. So I hope it's first order of business. And in fact, in about probably 20 minutes, the Revenue and Taxation Committee will be hearing the revenue estimates that will be based for these cuts in their own committee meeting. And so we might have a little bit of a prelude of how deep these cuts might actually be based on that revenue forecast.
So lawmakers will also consider an amendment that would allow school districts to use revenue generated by the capital levy to fund the school district's general fund for fiscal year 21. How could that help Park City?
So those dollars are available on a one-time basis. So as I read the language, it says that it's available for fiscal year 21. So it really feels like using reserves. We don't want to commit ourselves into a pattern of using the one-time money for an ongoing commitment in the budget. So it would help temporarily, but it really doesn't provide a long-term solution.
So any idea when the legislature could make a decision? You mentioned last night that it could be as long as 30 days before the school district finalizes a budget.
Yeah, so it kind of goes along with your first observation that the budget discussion is the first item on the call. I would hope that we would know by the end of tomorrow that, you know, the legislature will put this first priority in its discussions, and we'll be able to put to rest what we think the initial impact is of COVID on the state revenues, and then we can move on from there. But by law, they have a total of 30 days. I don't know that they've ever used that many days. The last special session, they held it in two different meetings, so they took a little over 8 days to get the business done on the last call.
So if they do go with a 10% cut, there's no need for another school district meeting here?
Correct. If that ends up being what really happens, our budget is set and we move forward. Again, we're all hopeful that that's the worst case scenario and that something much different will actually play out in the special session.
And if that's the case, a 2 or 5% cut instead, then what does that mean for the Park City School Board?
So that would either signal that we have reduced more than was necessary and we need to reconvene the board to reset the budget. And I think that's the most likely outcome, is that we would just reconvene the board and visit either compensation discussions, restoration of cuts that need to be reconsidered, or some other action that we haven't considered yet based on any other things that come out of the session.
All right. You also told the school board that the legislature will also look at this year's budget. Does that mean in practical, what does that mean? Because the school year's over, yeah?
Yeah. I was surprised to see that there. My guess is that there are still some financial mechanisms available to balance the fiscal year 20 that is more an action of adjusting reserve accounts or adjusting restricted accounts, not necessarily a cut to a budget, but just a change in its financing structure.
All right. Anything else on the budget you wanted to mention?
I appreciate everyone's patience in this process. I know that as we've gotten to the budget that was adopted last night, there's been a lot of concern, especially with the employees not being able to see a raise at this point in time. Again, I hope that changes here in the next 48 hours. But thank you for the patience. We're working through this together. We're trying to put all of our thinking into the right way so we keep the district in a good, sound financial position as we move through this interesting year.
Are you saying, Todd, that there is an opportunity that the staff may see a budget increase, a salary increase, if in fact that...
I'm hopeful on the side that we won't experience the full 10% reduction. There may be some reduction, but it may not be 10%.
And that would allow...
As those revenues are freed up, there's a big opportunity to have very positive conversations.
All right. Comment that the board heard was about the unilateral termination of contract negotiations. Board President Andrew Kaplan responded that it's, of course, the board's fiduciary responsibility to balance the budget. And again, mentioning that there's no tax increase that can be done now, and teachers just have to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
So is there something that would prevent the district from providing bonuses to staff and continue negotiations for coming years?
I think there's every opportunity to pick up the discussions where they left off and move forward in a positive way. I think the pressure of seeing such a large budget reduction in the face of trying to make a compensation package work was just overwhelming. And there just needed to be a pause, and that we had to deal with the first order of business, which was the state legislative cuts that are planned, and deal with those and then see where things lie so that we can make the rest of the decisions possible.
So again, we had heard that teachers can continue to work without a contract, and we've been seeing multi-year contracts. So if nothing's done for fiscal year 21, we just, push it ahead?
So the concept under the different agreements is that in the event that there is not a decision made under negotiations, that the current contract would extend for at least a year. And we've seen that happen before. When I first came to the district in 2012, we had challenging negotiations at that time, and contracts weren't solidified or ratified even until later in the school year. But we had moved forward on the existing contracts of the time, and then once that was settled, all the pay was retroactive back to when the contract year would have started. So we're in kind of that mode where we just move forward with existing schedules and contracts, and then when final contract decisions are made, they can be retroed.
Okay. The phased master planning recommendations are on the school district's website. You mentioned that it's important people understand the four phases are not either or, but rather a phased master plan, again, to get the ninth grade back into the high school, to build an expanded middle school for sixth through eighth grades, to expand all four elementary schools to allow pre-K, and also includes an after-school facility in two of the elementary schools, as well as, I guess, demolishing Treasure Mountain Junior High School. You had mentioned an August 4th meeting where the board will see a polished version from the architects to show how all of these financing pieces would be handled.
So, yeah, I don't know if it was August 4th, but in the August board meeting, we're planning to have our bond counsel and financial advisor talk the board through various financing options that could help support those strategies. So different debt vehicles, different tax levy strategies, and then we can marry up the strategies with how we would like to implement each of those strategies moving forward. So there's still a complicated conversation to be had. What we're looking at right now is, of those four strategies, is there public consent, or at least consensus, on the moving forward with those strategies? Is that making sense? We'll work on the timing for when the buildings are needed and when the financing can be brought to bear. But at this point, really, have we hit the mark? Is this the right expectation for how the school should be looking as we move into the next decade of education?
So after all is said and done, though, I mean, if you were to add up, I mean, you're saying it's not either or, but it is a phased master plan. I think we're talking $200+ million, yeah?
Oh, definitely. It's in that range. But again, depending on how we implement it, that may happen over 5 years or 7 years or 10 years. So it's, we just want to make sure we're in the right direction, moving the right way, and then we can manage the pace. So you got that strategy one, which takes care of the ninth grade interests and trying to get them into the high school. And we can do that for relatively low cost out of the whole package. And we can get that done fairly quickly. And then we have the more complicated and the more intense changes as you go through those other strategies. And we can delay those due to economic circumstances or to financing availability, or to any other dynamics that come up in the meantime.
So you talked about the possible need for another demographic study due to the possibility of 1,100 residential units there at the Tech Park. Is that going to be done?
Yeah, we'll definitely put that together. So that'll probably happen sometime in the fall, and so that we have the data available as we get into our next budget cycle. That will help inform both enrollment projections, but also, more importantly, having a better feel for where the actual growth is taking place, so that we can look at our current school configurations and the boundaries with those school configurations to see if we can accommodate the growth as it's projected in this study.
And you also mentioned about the Browns Canyon project, which is in Wasatch County, but due to its proximity to Park City, it could open up the issue of open schools. Is that a state legislative issue, or how does that work?
Sure. So right now, current law is that residents outside of our school district boundaries can apply to attend our schools. And as long as our schools are open as defined by statute, we process those applications. At the current time, because of the enrollment situations and growth that we're seeing and the programs that we're offering in the schools, our schools are technically closed to those outside applicants. The project coming online will just increase, we're anticipating, would increase the demand for people wanting to make application. And so that will put a pressure on the discussions around whether schools are open or not to outside residents. Under the statute, we can close the schools by particular formulas, but the board can always override that formula and say the schools are open anyway. And so that's where the pressure comes.
Interesting. We've had about 1% decrease in enrollment for the last couple of years. So doesn't that mean our schools should be open?
So under the formula, the board is also able to determine what the capacity of the school is based on program offerings. And so we have a number of STEM and art programs that are available in the schools, and those programs take space. And that space could either be for a program or it could be for a regular class. And in determining that the space is available for special programming, it's not available for regular education classes. And so we're able to essentially take that classroom offline, and it's not part of the calculation. So we can see that the capacity of the building for regular classroom services is not available to outside residents.
All right, Todd, hey, I need to leave it there. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Appreciate the opportunity to talk this morning.
That's Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Hauber. Thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:33. We'll be talking with Park City Manager Matt Dias right after this.
This is Kathy Burke, apparel buyer for Cole Sport, a local KPCW supporter since 1982. Cole Sport offers an array of men's and women's summer sportswear, swimwear, footwear, and accessories for your Park City mountain lifestyle. From summer frocks to shorts and flip-flops, Cole Sport, expect the unexpected.
Park City Council meets tomorrow via Zoom, starting in work session at 4:45. On the phone with an update, I have Park City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first up is a conversation to discuss the future uses of the city-owned Gordo property, as it's known. It's about 20 acres near Quinns Junction. It looks like just east of the Oscarthorpe alfalfa field. It has been used as kind of a seasonal storage and as well as the location for some stockpiled contaminated soils. At one point, it sounds like it was a possible location for a recycling facility, but it sounds like now we want to build a permanent storage site for contaminated soils?
So we may actually. You did a nice job summarizing that for me, but there's a collection of small parcels out there. It's approximately 20 acres, and we've used it for some light industrial uses in the past. And we're testing council if they're interested continuing those uses out there for a potential soils repository, and then maybe an in-town or a near-term solution for a recycling center in perpetuity.
So the deal is that the city needs to find some place to put any contaminated soil, just given that we're making the arts and culture district kind of shovel ready?
Well, that's the hope. I mean, obviously getting rid of contaminated soils is a very expensive endeavor. And to the extent that we can have a legally permitted soils repository close to town that isn't disruptive in terms of view sheds and isn't in a sensitive lands area, that would be a great benefit to the taxpayers of Park City. So, you know, staff is interested in this parcel and needs to get a temperature check from the city council if they're interested in this location. But clearly, there would be a great benefit to the taxpayers if we could have a in-town or a near-town location properly permitted, you know, adequately sited and not disruptive to the community. That would be preferable.
And it looks like you already received state approval from the Division of Waste Management and Radiation Control.
Yeah, we received more or less what I'll call a comfort letter that this would be an appropriate use, the location, if not in a sensitive land. So we did a little bit of work ahead of time. So council wasn't just, you know, walking around blindly. We did a little bit of work for them ahead of time.
If the city used open space money for this, does it have to stay as open space? And is a storage site considered open space?
No, I mean, it's a fine question. So there's a few different parcels in there, and there were different resources used to sort of collect those parcels or put them together. And there is a component of this Bango Wortley 22 acres that is open space and that we would likely not be able to touch. There's also potentially some zoning in there that would preclude some uses. And so there's probably a small section of this property that would be appropriate and isn't restricted by some previous covenants or, you know, how money was put together for open space. So there's a section of this property that would be available for this type of use.
And what about affordable housing?
So So, I mean, that's always a question. That's the reason that we're testing this with council in the past. We have been looking at municipal uses there. You know, as you've alluded to, we already have some temporary soil stored on site, and our public works facility uses it for some lay down purposes. But it's absolutely a piece of it's a community property. It's a city owned property, and it could be repurposed. I'm not sure if the zoning would support that outright, but it's something that we need to test council on and see what their inclinations are.
All right. During the regular meeting, you've got an update on Bonanza Flat. It sounds like we're rerouting some of the trails. One of the reasons would be to allow dogs to access bodies of water to keep them out of Bloods Lake?
Well, that's the goal. Currently, because of the water uses up there, dogs are not allowed on the Bloods Lake Trail. But we know that, you know, dogs are part of our community and very important to our trail users. And so I look at this as really phase two of the Bonanza effort. Now that the conservation easement is cured and is in place, and the Bloods Trail has been created and the trailheads and the restrooms are up there, there's some additional work with revegetation and some new trails that staff wants to put in. So this is really phase two of working on Bonanza Flat and making it more accessible to the community.
Sounds like the city received a $150,000 grant for Bonanza Flat. Can you tell us how that money would be spent?
Well, actually, it's more or less already been spent. So this is, we made the initial expenditure, and this is more or less a reimbursement. And by and large, it's been used on the new trailheads, the new restrooms, and some of the Bloods Lake Trail. So this is, you know, the city received confirmation that we received a grant, and it's a reimbursable grant. We make the initial expenditure, and then we're repaid once we've expended that money.
Okay, let's see. A discussion regarding the 2020 Planning Commission goals and priorities. The goals have been determined, it sounds like. Now it's just a matter of getting them done?
Well, so there's a really, really nice staff report and a schedule if the community's interested in it. But there's a lot of work that the Planning Commission is going to, you know, endeavor to undertake over the next, let's say, 10 to 12 months. And it runs the gamut from updating the land management code for sustainability measures, housing measures, how to treat, you know, unplatted built rights of way, consideration of accessory dwelling units, all sorts of special events code and cleaning up code. And so they've made a very, very rigorous schedule that takes us basically through today all the way to the new year, to the end of December. And it really is kind of a very, very rigorous undertaking, all sorts of amendments, code updates, but some really interesting discussions about housing and sustainability. So kind of congratulate them on that work, and they want it to be really transparent to the community and lay out the schedule.
So the Planning Commission will work on these and then forward it, or do they have some idea what the Park City Council wants to see in terms of these new goals or these new objectives?
I think that's a fine question, and to be honest, it's a little bit of both. You know, the Planning Commission is obviously very aware of council's sustainability goals, council's housing goals, council's transportation goals. And then there's been some other elements that have been kind of percolating or circulating in the community about unbuilt platted rights of way, event code, accessory dwelling units. So it's a combination. And that's the reason that we've spelled it out in the schedule and forecasted that ahead of time. The work the Planning Commission wanted to do, they wanted to be transparent on. They knew that some of these were council goals, and some of these are things that they find in their own work when they're reviewing MPDs and plats and other types of development in our community, things that need to be updated and amended.
So some of the goals I noted, nightly rentals cap, accessory dwelling units. I mean, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, what are we talking about? Allowing more accessory units? We have too many nightly rentals. We need to cap them somewhere.
Well, potentially both of those. I think these are sort of hot button topics that have been discussed in our community in the past. And, you know, for lack of a better term, maybe they were never put to rest. And so I think the Planning Commission wants to have some analysis done, some assessment done, and then potentially make a decision. And they need to do that in an open and public process. And so both of those have been contentious issues in our community, and people either supporting more stringent regulation or less. And I think you know, the Planning Commission is aware of that and willing to have those conversations in public.
All right. Let's turn to the budget. The council is scheduled to adopt a revised budget for the current year. How much is that down?
So this year's shortfall is almost $9 million. I feel a little bit like a little bit like a broken record, but as people, as I've alluded to, we have a provisional budget. So we've asked for 60 to 90 days to be able to adopt a provisional budget that's year over year down around $9 million. And we're seeking that, concession so we have more certainty with which to predict our fiscal year. Our fiscal year begins on July 1st. And there's just so much uncertainty, and we're not sure of the rate of recovery. So we've asked for a 60 to 90 day period to adopt the provisional budget. And we will be back in the fall when by then I hope that we have a better sense of what the recovery looks like, how small businesses are doing, what the big resorts are planning for their winter season. And then we can design a 9-month budget or a 10-month budget around that, then we have a little bit more certainty.
Okay, so the $9 million is for fiscal year 21. What about the revised budget for fiscal year 2020?
Fiscal year 2020 was down around $4 million. So next year, right out of the gate, we're predicting, at minimum a $9 million shortfall. The existing fiscal year, what happened in March, between March and June 30th, was a $4 million shortfall.
Yeah, and we heard from a few Main Street business owners that they are at or better than the same weekend last year. And it's estimated that we're at 90% of business from a year ago based on just this last weekend. It doesn't sound like we need a 20% cut.
Well, that's my hope. I mean, I'm very optimistic. We've had some really great initial feedback from our Main Street merchants about the rate of recovery. In particular, I think we got to give a lot of credit to our locals, quite frankly. I've seen a lot of wonderful chatter online and been talking to people in the supermarket. And I do think locals are doing their best to support our local businesses. Now, that being said, we still have a lot of hotels closed. Our resorts are still kind of closed for the summer activities. And so, the initial reports, I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful. But again, I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic. And that's the reason we're seeking this sort of 60 to 90 day provisional period. Our hope is that the resorts open up, the hotels open, we're operating safely and slowly. We get a better picture or a clearer picture of what might happen with events over the next year. And then we'll be in a better position to make some firmer forecasts.
All right. Anything at the legislature's special session that could impact the city?
All sorts of things, to be honest. I think, we are closely watching any additional flexibility we might have with our revenues and finances in terms of how certain types or certain pots of revenues are constrained. We are always watching the legislature for the ability for extension of premise to have more outdoor dining and limitations on that. So we're watching that closely, and our team will be down at the Capitol in the next couple of days.
All right. Also, there is a council and employee compensation ordinance up for a vote. You told me last week no one's getting a raise, so why do we have to adopt a new ordinance?
It's a state statute. It's a transparency measure that's in our state code, where every year we do this. So every year, kind of the appointed or elected officers of the municipality, there's a separate resolution calling out the range of their salary. So there was no increases from last year to this year, but it's sort of a perfunctory. It's a statutory obligation that we have that provides an additional level of transparency to the public.
All right. And then Car Free Sunday, how do you think the first week went?
Yeah, I mean, all in all, every indication is it was successful. It had a lot of locals on Main Street. We've gotten some really positive response initially from the merchants. If people were out there, the city did a few things in the background to support the event with some light activation, with some street art and a little bit of music. We had members of our staff handing out masks and hand sanitizer in the street, trying to encourage people to be safe, protect themselves and protect others. And then our hope is going forward that we have more participation from the merchants. My guess is some of them might have waited and tried to see what their peers were going to do. And the hope is that they saw that their peers were successful, and we're going to have more of them join into this Car-Free Sunday. So the initial reports were, it was successful, but we're hoping it gets better and better.
Okay. Anything else, Matt, you'd like to mention?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. It's Park City Manager Matt Dias. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:47. Good morning. Well, Park City Film continues to offer virtual screenings as the Jim Santee Auditorium still closed due to COVID. On the phone with details, I have the executive director, Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how are the virtual screenings going?
We're gaining some momentum, which is great. I think as people kind of settle into the new normal, they're getting more used to checking out virtual cinema offerings. We actually just released a reopening survey that we're hoping people will participate in. So if you're a recipient of our weekly e-blast, you'll have seen a link to that, but also on our Facebook page. And we're really looking forward to the fall and want to make sure that we are creating a safe and comfortable environment, obviously following all the state and city guidelines, but want to really hear back from our audience members about, you know, what they're enjoying in the virtual cinema, of course, but then also what they're looking forward to this fall. And we're also, you know, playing with the possibility of offering in-person screenings as well as virtual cinema screenings, because we know there's a certain contingent of our audience who probably won't feel comfortable being in enclosed environments of any kind, theaters and otherwise, until there's a vaccine for COVID-19. So we want to make sure that we're serving, you know, all of our community members to the best of our ability. But as far as the virtual cinema goes, it's, you know, it's exciting that normally we'd be closed this time of year, as you know, but now we're able to bring in a couple of new films every week, continue with our Q&As. We've got a free screening of a film called The Pollinators in July that we're working with the Summit County and Park City Libraries on. And then we're also looking at some drive-in movie options for the summer, certainly continuing our annual event in Prospector Square, but then looking at other parts of the county to bring in some kind of fun experiences for the summertime.
Okay, so when you look what you're going to be presenting through these virtual screenings, what is it that you're looking for?
So what's interesting is on the kind of the mass market films, you know, if you heard in the news, you know, Tenet is supposed to be coming out and Mulan, you know, those are not, blockbuster films are not really what we program anyway. So we're looking at smaller independent films, things that we normally would bring to our screen. But we're also looking for engagement. As an example, we have a film coming up that we just opened up yesterday called Picture Scientist. This was a film that was supposed to premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival in 2020, which of course was canceled or, you know, went virtual. This is a documentary about the discrimination and bias that women frequently face in the STEM fields. And it's, you know, something, a story that you hear a lot about, but what the film prevents it in a completely new way. And that's certainly something that we look for. And, you know, through the stories and activism of three female scientists, a biologist, a chemist, and a geologist, you hear their stories. And these are not, you know, Harvey Weinstein type stories of sexual harassment, although that happens as well. But these are more kind of death by a thousand cuts, you know, which is less obvious, but certainly no less devastating in the end. You know, as we talk about women in the sciences, we want to bring them in, of course. And I think we've been quite successful kind of at a meta level of bringing young women and women of color into the STEM field. But if they're going to stay there and be successful, we have to create an environment that they want to work in day to day. And so these three scientists are doing just that. And then tonight there'll be a Q&A with the directors of the film, the three scientists who are profiled in the film. And then Molly Webster of Radiolab is moderating it. And that's actually a free discussion on YouTube. Anyone can participate in that. Of course, we'd love to have you buy a ticket to the film as well. It's good for 48 hours for you to stream. So you can check out the Q&A and then watch the film afterwards, or, you know, check out the film beforehand. But, you know, it's a way to create community and conversation. We're always looking for films like that, whether we're virtual or in person. But certainly now in the virtual cinema environment, it's important that people do participate, because not only does it help us, certainly as a theater, but it helps stories like this be told. And that's really kind of the risk right now that we're looking at with independent film, is if people aren't coming to see these films, there's no feedback to the distributors and to the studios that these are the stories people want to hear. And then, they, of course, if they don't hear that feedback, they don't continue to fund them. So it's this interesting environment that we're in. But we're, you know, we're still looking at the same lens of these films, but looking at diversity, bringing stories that connect our community and hopefully open their eyes to different stories that they may not have been aware of, or take them to a different level, certainly as you see with Picture of Scientist.
So what is the cost of a film?
So it varies by distributor. For Picture of Scientist, since that's what we're talking about, it's $6.99. Prices vary basically between $5 and $12. The distributors have been quite good about saying, okay, this is the price that everyone has to charge. So if, you know, if you go to kind of a megaplex, sometimes it's, you know, upwards of $15 for ticket, and certainly Park City Film are much lower at, you know, $8 for general admission. But because everything can be accessed from anywhere, they don't want people picking and choosing, like, oh, I want to go to, you know, the Salt Lake Film Society, or I'm going to pick out Park City Film's ticket because it's a better price, and kind of shopping around, said, you know, let's just keep it even. It's a a 50% split between the theaters and the distributors. And of course, the distributor split is what ultimately goes back to pay the filmmakers. So it slightly varies, but they're available for between, 48 to 72 hours. So you have some time to watch them or rewatch them if you'd like.
Right. And again, I mean, it's like you can have six people watching one film, whereas when you used to get butts in a seat, it would be $8 a person, right?
Right, exactly. And of course, you can make your own popcorn, so you're saving on concessions. That's usually where theaters make most of their money.
All right. Let's see. When do you add the new screenings? I mean, is there something that goes up every day, or is it every Thursday, or is there a rhyme or reason to it?
Yes, absolutely. And so we do try to bring them in every Friday. So we, quote unquote, open them every Friday, and we've adjusted our weekly e-blast. It used to go out kind of on a Wednesday, and then it would give people a preview of coming attractions, as it were. But now with the virtual cinema, once people see something, they're like, oh, I'm excited about this film. You want them to be able to click and watch right away. Picture Scientist is a little bit different in that the Q&A is tonight. And so we wanted to open it before, we didn't want to wait and have people not be able to see the film before the Q&A if they wanted to. Another film we're bringing in on Friday that we're opening up is called Lucky Grandma. And it's kind of a dark comedy. And the lead character is played by Tsai Chin from the Joy Luck Club. And if you're not familiar with her, she's kind of the Chinese version of Maggie Smith, so kind of that biting wit that everyone loves about Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey. But it's about an 80-year-old widow who kind of lands on the wrong side of luck at the casinos and then ends up in the middle of a Chinatown gang war. So very clever, very funny. This is also another film that came out at the Tribeca Film Festival in 2019. And the filmmakers for that film are inviting folks that watch the film to support the Welcome to Chinatown Fund, which is a COVID relief fund to support businesses in New York's Chinatown, which of course has been suffering because of the COVID pandemic, but also some xenophobia that's been happening around COVID-19 as well. So, again, very interesting conversations that are happening around the films and just the ability to support other businesses, other artists, as you get to watch these films and enjoy them from the comfort of your home. As you said, it's, you're getting a great discount. So it's kind of a great bargain to see these stories. So maybe the money you'd spend on popcorn, you could make a donation to support another group.
Okay. Again, we should let people know that there that live Q&A on the film Picture Scientist. It's happening tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and people can... How will they know where to get the YouTube live chat feed?
We have it on our Facebook page as a link, and then if you go to our website, and there's a Q&A link within the profile for that film, and then that will go live at 6 o'clock. Again, that's free. If you want to buy a ticket to the film, that's $6.99, but parkcityfilm.org. And I do want to give a shout-out to our members and donors. We've seen a tremendous amount of support from them over the past couple of months, and we really can't thank them enough, because right now, of course, we are generating some revenue through these ticket sales, but it's not nearly the same as if we were open. So we really appreciate everyone coming out and showing their love, and please do take the survey. We want to know what you think as we look at opening back up in the fall.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope. That's it. Thank you very much. Enjoy some films, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Katie Wang is the Executive Director of Park City Film. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:56. Well, the Summit County Council meeting in regular session today. We'll be looking at some budgeting and finance items tied to the impacts of the coronavirus outbreak. KPCW's Rick Brupp has more about that.
The county council was meeting electronically at about 3:45 p.m. First up, they will be talking with County Sheriff Justin Martinez and Lieutenant Andrew Wright about community programs of the Sheriff's Office. At about 4:15, they will get a quarterly budget report that reviews how their revenues have been impacted by the COVID-19 outbreak and lockdown. County Manager Tom Fisher said they won't know about their property tax revenues until the end of the year. He said it appears that land values held up and they saw little new growth. He said the staff reported that sales tax were down 10% for May. Revenues from restaurant and lodging activity declined more than that.
I think in the staff report, we're seeing somewhere in the range of about 31% down for May. Although May is a fairly low number of traditionally of collecting those types of sales taxes.
And at about 4:30, they will discuss the aid money they're receiving from the federal government and through the state under the so-called CARES Act. The staff is reporting the county could get at most close to $6 million. Fisher said that comes in three allocations in June, August, and October. The first payment is just under $2 million.
Just overall with the rules, each city and county that gets an allocation has to make sure that these dollars are expended by December 30th. But there's a nuance to that, that if you haven't identified your spending by the end of November, you've got to turn it back so that it can be redistributed in December to other communities that perhaps have other expenditures that they could use that money for. The state is trying to maximize the expenditure of that allocation.
Fisher said the aid comes with rules about spending the funding, and it will be subject to audit.
You know, we've had a lot of expenses that were not budgeted because of this emergency. For instance, we've had to do a lot of extra cleaning protocols and buy of extra products for our jail in order to keep it safe and keep it from spreading COVID. Those kinds of expenses are what this money is really for.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Looks like the clouds are breaking up and we should see some sunshine. Looking for a cool day though. 53 is the expected high. Even colder tonight. 35 is the overnight low. Sunshine in 63 on Thursday. Up to 68 on Friday. We're going to be back into the 70s for Saturday and Sunday. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for headline news from NPR, followed by The Mountain Life. It's 9 o'clock.